Today on Compassion Radio.
He managed to get into a church building, and the KGB would not go into the church building because legally he could take sanctuary there. And my friend went into the church and said, "What are you going to do? Because if we walk out of here, they're going to come after you again." We called him Victor, by the way. It was his code name. And he said, "They can't kill me twice." He said, "I died the night I gave my life to Jesus. They can't kill me again." He, after that, went to prison two different times.
Back to the front lines of faith with Compassion Radio. That's what today is all about. I hope you're ready for a true account of how faith and opportunity intersect when we simply obey the call to go. For the two previous broadcasts, Jim Gilbert has been our guest. This accomplished author, Christian songwriter, and vocalist has been under plenty of bright stage lights. But the real adventure happened on dusty desert roads and in musty basements in ancient churches or interrogation rooms in communist countries. We'll drop in now with a quick recap on how he faced down terrorists in Iraq on the way to providing relief supplies to Christian refugees. To hear all the current episodes in this series we've titled Going with a Song and a Prayer, head over anytime to our podcast archive at CompassionRadio.com. And now, back to my interview with mission entrepreneur Jim Gilbert.
This pastor, I knew he had a good reputation that I'd never met. He said, "I see a day coming when a Muslim government is going to ask you for advice and you're going to consult to them." And I just thought it was ridiculous. I'd forgotten it for 30 years because it sounded so ridiculous. First of all, I didn't want to go to that part of the world. I was already going into communist countries. Why take on Islam too? So I didn't want anything to do with it. I'd forgotten it for 30 years. I'd forgotten it while I was in Iraq, all through this. But that same trip when we got ambushed by Iranian terrorists, as it turned out, I found out a year later, were planning to put us in orange jumpsuits back in Iran, take us across the mountains and hold us hostage, try to get some money, if not, show us off the way we were killed.
I know this is shorthand for talking about brutal treatment, but any time that ISIS wanted to play the end game, they always started with prisoners in orange jumpsuits. I don't know why the orange color was so significant to them, but it was. And they used that as saying this is a condemned man's outfit.
Yeah. They were horrendously torturous.
Yeah.
That same trip had been asked to write these articles for this constitution. I always billed myself jokingly as internationally unknown.
Yeah.
So how in the world can you anticipate such an honor? And then to realize that some stranger said it to you, I don't care if you're Pentecostal or Catholic or Baptist or whatever. Somebody says something like that to you, and then it comes to pass 30 years later, almost to the day,
Yeah. You're
going to pay attention. So we kept going back to Iraq. My last time there was 2019, and then the COVID year hit. They've had a harder time keeping it from spreading than we have here, so we haven't been able to go back. Meanwhile, the war in Ukraine started.
Yeah.
I said to my wife, it was end of February, beginning of March, and the war was about a week old. Everything's in the headlines. It was just brutal. And I said to my wife, you know, I know we've got to do something. Oddly enough, this won't leave me alone. I think that we need to have a fundraiser on Facebook. Facebook fundraisers, it's usually like, you know, $250 for surgery for my dog or something.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not putting down that. That's fine. You know, it wasn't GoFundMe. It wasn't some big platform. And I don't have, I got like supposedly 4,200 Facebook friends, but really I only know a couple hundred of them. You know how the word friend is a very loose word on social media.
I understand.
I said, I just think we're supposed to do it. So I called my vice president, the man who'd taken Terry's place. And as much as I served him, he agreed to be my vice president. So it's like having your dad as your
wingman,
as your wisdom. You know, he's like a spiritual father to me. But when he passed away, I had replaced him with someone I had known way back in the early 70s, mid-70s, and had stayed in touch with. I called him and he said, well, look, man, if you're going to do that, now he's not on social media, this guy. He said, if you're going to do that, maybe aim for like 50,000.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, I got a bigger figure. I'm in six figures. Well, start with 50. I said, okay. Well, I made some phone calls and he was one of them. He said, I'll help you start. And then we had enough in our account at home from not having traveled as much during the COVID year. We had enough to at least put some seed money into it.
Okay.
It's going to come out of our salaries, but you know, we could at least get it started. I made phone calls. And by the time I went onto Facebook, I had $44,000.
Yeah.
Well, the goal's got to be higher than that. So I put it at 75. Within a week, we had 75. So then I raised it to 100. People were just sending money right and left everywhere because Ukraine was in the headlines.
Right. The window of opportunity is there.
So we wound up in 2022, and I got to go to Poland to watch this. In fact, I took my daughter with me. She had her 21st birthday over there. We went to Poland because there was 2 million refugees in Poland from Ukraine. So we were working with refugees there in all kinds of emergency situations, including food, bedding, clothing, everything you can think of, but as well sending money into Ukraine itself because I had contacts there. We were able to send just our little two people the total of $133,000 in 2022.
That's awesome.
2023 came, and I think President Zelensky's wife referred to it as compassion fatigue. When you're not in the headlines anymore, and by the way, there are false rumors being spread about you, somehow trying to make Putin the good guy, which is just absurd. But nonetheless, we're still able to get about $49,000. In 2023. So altogether, it's been a little over 180. I have to tell you one thing that really bothers me is the fact that American evangelicals give more to missions work than anybody else in the world.
Even today, yes.
Even today. But American evangelicals have also bought into, first of all, a lot of conspiracy theories, and the conspiracists are eager to report things before they research them, if they research them, because they want to give you the news nobody else will report.
Mm-hmm.
So they buy into rumors. And the more absurd the rumor, the more it might be true. I've even heard a member of Congress say that. So what happens, unfortunately, is Americans would tell you that they get their political philosophy from their theology, but it's actually the reverse.
Yeah.
Too many American evangelicals in particular are getting their theology shaped by their political ideologies. And as a result, they tend to conflate politics and humanitarian work. So I've had people say to me, well, Zelensky and Putin, I don't trust either one of them, so I'm not doing anything. I've got Ukrainian friends that are facing starvation, facing death. I know you interviewed a mutual friend of ours a few weeks ago. She is a mid-30s housewife and a businesswoman whose husband is fighting to defend the country. But she gets in their family crossover, packs it to the gills with whatever she has the money to buy, and she goes helmeted up, drives her own vehicle all the way to the front lines where it's dangerous,
yes.
And she distributes aid. I've talked with her the last couple of days. She's planning another trip into, I just say it's an area that's under fire. And I said, will somebody be with you to help guard you? She said, well, maybe. I don't know yet. She's going to go anyway.
Yeah.
And she's got two kids. She's got a husband in battle. She's got a business that has been actually a very successful startup this last year, award-winning, in fact. But she knows that these people are in need and they're her countrymen. And God uses her tremendously. So when I know that, and then I turn around and my own congressional representative is saying, well, I don't think we should do any more aid there. It just drives me nuts.
Yeah.
I know, I understand that if you give the government money, it suddenly becomes government money. People don't want government aid going for their own reasons. But government aid is not just military. There's also humanitarian aid. I don't send military aid, but I send humanitarian aid. And I have friends in danger. I have friends in a whole church that I know in one of the cities where last year, they had lost so much in their homes, and half the congregation had fled into Poland, and half the congregation was still back in Ukraine in a particular city. And when I went to a church, I knew there were some Ukrainians in the church. I did not know how many. It was half the congregation in the little church I went to speak in. But I woke up about 6:15 Sunday morning crying. And I'm a pretty sober guy. I'm not a highly emotional guy. You might call me Anglicostal, sort of, or Episcopalcostal. So, but, you know, I feel deeply, but I don't act dramatic and all that on a platform. I woke up crying. I knew I was going to have to sing. I wrote a little chorus 50 years ago that they still sing over there. I love you with the love of the Lord. They still sing that song. I knew it in Polish. So everywhere I go, I have to sing this song because they still use it 50 years later. But I was still crying when I got to the church 4 hours after I had awakened. I cried through breakfast in the hotel. I just kept crying. And so when I walked up to speak, I said, I know what I have to do. I just don't know how it's going to come out. So I'll sing, I'll speak. All I know is I have to say this. The good thing is, I suppose it's the reason that this was so heavy and I was emotional, because I had to speak from a place of brokenness.
Yeah.
You can't just have some American walk up and give advice to people whose families are back home dodging rockets. You actually can't dodge rockets, but they're there and they're under fire all the time. And while I was speaking to them, this picture formed in my mind. I suppose some people would call that a vision. All I know is my imagination was inspired. But I could see this hot air balloon in this picture. I was just completely confronted with destruction.
Hmm.
Everything, just destruction. Bombed like crazy. I know what that looks like anyway. But I'm in this hot air balloon, and as I'm lifted up in the balloon, I start seeing over the edge of the town, out into the grassland, and in the far distance, this beautiful gleaming city. And I realize as I'm seeing it that it's more like looking across time to the future. As this thing was forming in my mind, I narrated it to those people. And I said, I want to encourage you, like Jeremiah. Jeremiah prophesied when everything was destroyed in Jerusalem, he prophesied that the day would come when the voices of the bride and the bridegroom would again be heard in the city and there would be celebration.
Yeah.
I said, Jeremiah, he had that word to give to people. And I'm not standing here claiming to be a prophet. I'm just somebody who cares about you. And I want to help you in any way I can. But I want to encourage you to look to the future.
Compassion Radio will continue to keep bringing you encouragement from the Word, inspiring stories from the front lines of faith, and awesome opportunities to make a difference for the kingdom around the world. But we need your help right now to continue doing just that. Please take a moment today to consider how you might help us to accomplish our unique media ministry and mission. Remember, friends, Compassion Radio is always a coalition of the willing. Are you willing to help get out God's good news stories of the kingdom really living the gospel in the 21st century? Oh, I hope so. Thank you, friends, for standing with Compassion Radio during these times of great change to our normal life. Of course, there's nothing normal about our situation, but there's also nothing normal about the kind of faith and power we find in Jesus. Just visit our website, CompassionRadio.com, or call our toll-free order line, 1-800-868-2478. And note our new mailing address, which is P.O. Box 77160, Corona, California, 92877. Again, that's Box 77160, Corona, California, 92877. And now, back to the broadcast.
When everything was destroyed in Jerusalem, he prophesied that the day would come when the voices of the bride and the bridegroom would again be heard in the city and there would be celebration.
Yeah.
I said, Jeremiah, he had that word to give to people. And I'm not standing here claiming to be a prophet. I'm just somebody who cares about you. And I want to help you in any way I can, but I want to encourage you to look to the future. You feel like you're in exile, but what did Jeremiah say to people in exile? He said, build houses, in other words, put down roots, build houses, be self-sufficient, you know, plant your gardens, keep having children, don't be afraid of the future, and have your children have children, and then seek the welfare of the city where I've put you. That's all in Jeremiah 29.
Right.
So I said, stay involved and look forward to the future. Look past the destruction. Now, I found out through the pastor of that church, that the leader of that group from Ukraine, he said, we've prayed ever since we got here. What do we do next? And he said, that American you had there today went down our entire prayer list of what to do next.
Hmm.
And I was incredibly grateful and at the same time humbled, but we were able to help them. But I said to them, when everything around you is destruction, look to the future.
Yeah.
Well, 3 months after I was there, Putin bombed the dam outside their city, and everything that hadn't been bombed was flooded. There was nothing. Flood doesn't miss anything. It's not like a rocket, you know. It doesn't just hit next door. Everything was flooded. So we've been able to help there. And that young lady that you and I know, that housewife who drives her vehicle, goes into that very city now with aid. So I know even now we can send aid to them. And I would ask any evangelical Christian, no matter what age, who hears this podcast, I'll just ask you, whatever you do, don't let your politics determine your compassion. Whatever rumors you hear, you know, if somebody said that they didn't like me and they're not going to do anything to meet my need because they don't like Biden, I don't have anything to do with Joe Biden or with Donald Trump. I do what I do. My needs, I got to feed my daughter tomorrow. That doesn't have anything to do with whoever's president. Same thing's true in Ukraine. Whoever you support, there are good people. Samaritan's Purse does tremendous work over there. Whoever it is that you were supporting last year, start supporting them again. You don't need to support me. Start supporting them again and let them keep doing their humanitarian work because that's God's work.
Yeah.
That should actually be so generous that the government wouldn't need to send aid. You know, I think as long as we don't send the gospel, we'll have to keep sending armies.
And by sending gospel to live it out.
Yeah. If we really send the gospel, missionaries make the best ambassadors. I think businessmen make the best diplomats. Presbyterian theologians said that one time. I agree with him.
When they're doing their job right, yeah.
When they're doing their job right.
The requirements of your job to be successful at what you think you're doing have spillover. So there's always something about the virtue set where God has put you that it will have effects that are positive we can't even measure or even imagine until God puts them together. That's why there's so many missional people that we admire so much that are embedded because God put them there. And they don't even think of themselves as being missionaries.
No, they don't.
They're being missional. They're living missionally.
The word missionaries, it just means somebody who was sent.
Yeah.
The closest word's probably apostle in the Bible.
Right.
But really, the better word, I think, is ambassador. We're called ambassadors in 1 Corinthians, mm-hmm. right? Paul called us ambassadors. That's not an analog in any sense. We're not said that in some figurative way. It's true. We are ambassadors. As surely as anybody in the world is an ambassador, except that our job description is more real than theirs.
Yeah. The chorus you mentioned earlier that you were most famous for and the music you've written over the years, but having sung your music on four different continents myself with teams, I can't tell you the transformational thing that happens when the thing is so ingrained in your body, in your fingers, in your mind that you could wake up singing your song without even realize you're singing it because you've sung it so many times.
Yeah.
And you describe that for yourself, right? You've written the thing. It's like, ask the Beatles. How can you play A Hard Day's Night after 60 years? Well,
sure.
It's so in you. The music that God has inspired you to do has been like that for the Christian community around the world. And I can't tell you how many times in my own experience with my own groups where I've woken up, as you say, on the weepy side of things because I'm suddenly feeling God's love for the people in my own group.
Yeah.
And it's just there because it's right there in the song. It always was there. Or opening up a vision for loving people that feels so different, so other from you, that you don't know how to cross that barrier, but somehow God's love enters into it. And suddenly, that kairos moment happens where you realize that they are it. If there were no other people on this planet, God would say,
yes.
I would die for that. I would create a whole universe and die for that.
You're right. You're right.
Are they still writing like that in the church out there? Is God inhabiting the praises of his people like he talks about?
Yes. In fact, I'll say this. In a lot of countries, the musical groups in churches are trying to be either Hillsong in their nationality or Jesus culture in their nationality. They're imitating. In Poland, that's not the case. Now, they may do some songs from further west that they translated into their language, but they're also writing their own. And the musicianship in Poland is three times higher than it is in my own country. They are really, really good musicians.
Yeah.
And if we're invited to do some kind of a seminar for people over there, I spoke to one group, there was several worship teams together, and I said, come on, you guys, you gave us Chopin, we gave you Elvis.
Same thing, different chapter.
Very different chapter. And in terms of pure music, let's face it, Chopin is a bit higher. Now, Elvis might have communicated better, but somewhere in the middle there, you're going to have a Jacob Collier or you know, some incredible musician. If you don't know who he is, look him up on YouTube.
Exactly.
It's like Mozart for the 21st century.
It's been inspiring all of my son's music, too. I long for the day when you're stepping out there and there's no longer just imitation for fear of missing out.
Yeah.
But that there's inspiration because there's a vision that's bubbling up. You can see just over the horizon.
I agree.
I'm praying for the day when more of that happens.
There's a particular church in Cuba where they have a large enough church that they actually can meet en masse, a couple thousand people, probably the biggest church in Cuba. And their church group practices, but they're really singing a lot of songs from much further north of the English world. I said, come on, you guys, get your trumpets and your gut string guitars, classical guitars, and start doing a bit of the Besame Mucho kind of songs. You know, be Cubans. Make Cuban music.
Yeah.
Because that's what people will relate to.
Right. I want to explore with you, Jim, sometime on another program, just the heart of worship again, because our mutual friends are committed to imbuing courage into the hearts of young musicians to say, God is not calling you to play music. He's calling you to let music inhabit your soul. And it comes from the heart of God. And finding a way to put it into words and the culture and the tone and the texture of your culture as I put you in that place.
Yeah.
He didn't embed me in Ukrainian culture or in Cuban culture. He embedded me into an American culture. So I've got a lot of privileges because of that. But that doesn't mean that I have any clue what it's like to be a Cuban worshiping God or being a Pole or a displaced Ukrainian. I have to let them lead me. And show me the way through that. And some of your good friends are doing a very good job of encouraging those leaders in the making to let them know that you stand like Aaron did and all his descendants in a place of special favor before God. You know, he called you in this generation to hold that baton and those instruments and carry them to the next generation and not leave anyone behind. Do it well where you are in the time that you have, and God will be pleased. I'm deeply grateful that you and people that you work with are investing in those people that way. So we'll do a whole maybe mini series just on where the heart of worship is these days.
Sounds great.
But I do want to cycle back to the issues with Ukraine especially. Real politic here. In this past week, you and I have been hearing about a couple of what will turn out to be, I'm sure of this, very fundamental events in the history of Ukraine and Russia. One is the final assassination of Navalny,
yes,
as a dissident. The audacity of the current regime in Russia to go ahead and kill him at a specific point in time publicly enough to announce it immediately.
Yeah.
Goes well beyond the scope of the rage that was put against other dissidents back in World War II history.
Yes.
And even Solzhenitsyn being able to survive his whole generation and be able to report on that, he would not have survived this regime. It's like there's nobody left to give a second report from.
Nobody.
I do believe because of what he means, he's assassinated now for a reason. I do believe that Russians have a history of not just creating pretext for things, but creating preludes. And it does seem to me that the killing of Navalny is a prelude to something, which will happen soon. We've been hearing about armies massing right now behind Zaporizhia on the Russian side of the line,
yeah,
getting ready for another penetrative motion toward the interior of Ukraine. And I say this not to talk about geopolitics and warfare, but simply to say that the people that you work with, the people you visited with, people that you pray over, and that you minister to, and that your friends bring aid and relief to, it's an existential threat in front of them. But they're not fighting this war just with weapons that are being provided by the West.
No.
The people we know are fighting this war on their knees.
Yes.
And they live to die to themselves so that Christ might live within them. And if they have to lay down their life for their country, that's another layer of responsibility and honor, but it's secondary to laying down their lives now before the King of Kings.
Yes.
Hundreds of thousands of people that are serving in the military of Ukraine started as spiritual warriors. They're not coming to faith in the foxhole because they're desperate. They're desperately serving God where they are because he's already captured their hearts. What do we need to know, Jim, from what you know of your people, your best friends over there, about what it's like to step out in obedience to the kingdom of God when your people are being slaughtered or you're being called to do things that are things you never would want to have to be involved with in your entire lifetime, but your nation needs you. It's always, as far as I can see, a very complicated and gut-wrenching experience to have to say, I am a servant of my God first and of my brother and of my family, my church, but I'm also a brother of my nation.
Yes.
You're not torn, but the pressure of the grief is layered in ways that we can't even fathom over here. What do you see in that, and what does God put in your heart to tell them and share with them and to comfort them when you go?
I have a two-part answer. I think the first part shorter. One of our friends during Soviet times was an Estonian man who went to prison twice because he was an effective youth leader in a Methodist church. In fact, your pastor, your priest, knows this guy. And when they were after him, he managed to get into a church building, and the KGB would not go into the church building because legally he could take sanctuary there. And my friend Terry Law went into the church and said, what are you going to do? Because we walk out of here, they're going to come after you again. And this is before he ever went to prison. We called him Victor, by the way. It was his code name. I wrote a song called Victor's Song about him. In the song, I said, the story of my brother could be 100,000 others, and believe me, they're all victors just the same. And he said, they can't kill me twice. He said, I died the night I gave my life to Jesus. They can't kill me again. He, after that, went to prison two different times. I think that's the attitude of an awful lot of people that I know, including on the Polish side.
Yeah.
You know, if you've read the latest reports from Navalny's widow, she's going to take his place. She's as vulnerable as he was.
Yeah.
But she said, I'm going to stand for what he stood for. Who knows what will happen to her?
And that is no small sacrifice to be proclaiming over your own self when you are now a widowed mother of young men and women. You're taking the risk of leaving them as orphans.
Yeah, you're right. Just as our mutual friend in Kiev does. And I know others.
Yeah.
But you know, the Christians in Europe don't have to look all the way back to the 1800s to know the Civil War was on their soil. They don't have to look back that far. Granted, a lot of them weren't alive during Soviet times even. Some of them don't believe it ever happened in their places. I've been asked to tell stories from my own encounters with the KGB and other figures, and I was never arrested. We always figured out a way to keep ourselves covered, and one of my friends, they even took out and got him drunk. They knew he had a bit of a weakness left for alcohol and got him drunk. He's a pastor now. And he said, I still wouldn't talk. I let the KGB buy me the best booze in town that I could never afford. I had a really great night, but I didn't give you guys up. They couldn't figure out why my wife and I kept going back. In fact, we ended up making the headlines in Estonia, still during communist times, in their local news, simply because we kept going back and didn't have family or business there.
Yeah.
And it actually was newsworthy. The year before the Soviet Union fell apart, the TV news in Estonia met us at the airport with all the bright lights and the cameras, and going through customs was a breeze that day.
The international people of mystery are back.
And those guards were friendly as they could be because the cameras were on them. But, you know, it just was because we loved them. Hmm. I did a concert tour called I Love Estonia, and people showed up at the concerts everywhere. It was pretty remarkable.
Believe it or not, our friend Jim Gilbert is just getting warmed up. We'll hear more of his amazing stories on future broadcasts. I hope you'll join us for those. In the meantime, you can learn more about Jim's writing and his ministry on the podcast page for this program at CompassionRadio.com.
Give online today or call us at 1-800-868-2478 and P.O. Box 77160, Corona, California 92877. We need you, friend, so contact us today.